everybody. Okay, I'm just waiting for everybody to log on. Yes, we are here. Thank you all for being here today. I'm actually gonna try to see if I can write self-forgiveness. Hold on one second, okay guys? I wish there was a way to edit this stuff out, but okay. And I think you're supposed to then pin it. There we go. We are talking about self-forgiveness today. Please put your questions related to the topic of self-forgiveness into the little section down there, which has a question mark. Please be polite, please be kind, and let's get started. So, self-forgiveness. I recently did a talk on forgiveness of other people, and that's really hard, and I even talked about how that is not an easy thing for most people to do, including myself. And but I think what is even harder than self-forgiveness, what is harder than other forgiveness, is self-forgiveness. Now, I have some notes here that I'm going to be referring to. And just so everyone knows, that it is not in our nature to forgive. It's actually not a natural thing for us to be able to do. It is something that should and must, if we want to be well, be cultivated. Okay, so this is not like, oh, she's such a forgiving person. We're not born this way. And biologically, our hardwiring is such that we actually remember our wounds, our mistakes. Because let's think back, evolutionarily speaking, if someone, walked by, let's just say we're in a certain part of the savanna or the woods, and we know that there is something that can wound you there, we're gonna go and we're gonna tell everybody about it, and then we're gonna be sort of hyper-vigilant whenever we walk by that place, or whenever we walk by that tribe, or whenever we walk by that neighborhood, whatever you wanna call that. And so it is registered in our brain as, watch out, areas like this, people like this, people that look like this, people that feel like this could hurt you. So this is our biological wiring. We will register these wounds far more deeply than the good that happens in our world, because there is a protective, self-protective, survival-related mechanism here at play. So if someone hurts you, you're gonna wanna remember that. And then anyone that reminds you of that, you're gonna come at them with that lens of. So we really rarely see people that for who they are. We see them through the lens of our past experiences. In other words, baggage. That's what we call baggage. However, we all have it, you know, so it's not like, oh, she's got baggage and he doesn't. Everyone has baggage. And we come to our relationships with this baggage until and unless we become conscious of that baggage. So let's just say my husband says something that triggers me. Trigger means past wound coming up to the surface, okay? Past wound coming up to the surface, and I react in such a way, even though he was maybe not, you know, oh, I don't really like these curtains. Maybe he says something like this. And all of a sudden I feel so triggered, and now I'm, you know, he's so critical, and why is he doing this? Obviously, it has nothing to do with the curtains and the husband. It has a lot to do with my you know, shame of not being perfect or not getting it right, or maybe spending too much money on those curtains. Nothing happened with my curtains, by the way. I just looked up, saw curtains. So I'm not like giving you guys like any intel as to what happens in my home. I'm just using an example for when we can get triggered. And so all of those past experiences can come to the surface, and then I launch into a self-defense, I want to say an attack, but it's more in self-defense. And he's probably confused because he was just talking about the curtains. But that's how our brain holds on to past experiences and then protects us from anything that could trigger a painful feeling. And shame is a very, very painful feeling, okay? And shame, out of all feelings, shame is the one that most of us are protecting ourselves from when we hold on to anger, okay? Now, that's that. So biologically, it's not our wiring. It is a protective mechanism to hold grudges. It makes us feel like we are in control, and I will tell you why and how. But that's basically our psyche saying, you're safe, I got this. You're not gonna get hurt again. Or you're not gonna do this wrong thing again. So that's why forgiveness can be so difficult when it comes to other people. Now, forgiveness, when it comes to ourselves, is the same, actually. And I'm not gonna go into a full-on hour of how it's so beneficial, but I will tell you that research shows that it will shield against things like depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress. And so there is research that shows that people who have cultivated self-forgiveness and can forgive themselves for certain experiences have fewer symptoms related to these diseases, okay? But it also is something more than that. You know, I'm not gonna just remain clinical in the way I talk about things. Self-forgiveness is about bringing, it's about having access to energy again. It's about feeling more energetic, feeling more alive, feeling more joy, feeling like you just have more energy to go through your day. Because what we don't realize is that grudges and revenge and anger uses up a lot of energy. And we, most of us, think about it. I'm gonna ask you to think about it. Is there anything in your life that you need to forgive yourself for? Any wound that you might have caused someone, any mistake you made, in, you know, knowingly or unknowingly, where it resulted in someone feeling hurt, but then you were too proud to maybe go and talk to them, or maybe you were incapable, or maybe you were unskilled, incompetent in knowing how to have those conversations. Maybe just the ego just had a very strong grip, and the ego is there mostly because it's protecting you from shame. So like, is there any part in your life where you can actually say, yeah, that happened? You know, many, many years ago, I was going through a difficult life experience, and I remember reading this book on like 40 days to freedom or something. I don't know, self-freedom or liberation or something. And I remember like day one, it was like do this, and day two, do that, and day three. So I was doing all of these exercises. And then we got to like day nine, and it was like, you know, we're gonna work on self-forgiveness. God is my witness. I closed that book and I never picked it up again. I actually don't know if it's even on my shelf. I had such a violent reaction to that idea. Like, what do you mean forgive myself? I can forgive other people, but I will not forgive myself. And so that, but I didn't even do it consciously. It was not like, I will not forgive myself. It was just like, I don't need forgiveness. It was more in that sort of unconscious way that I was saying, that this is work I'm not ready to do yet, okay? So there was even no willingness for me to engage in that, you know, 40-day program beyond the self-forgiveness, because everything was sort of built upon that. So I ended up not doing the 40 days to liberation. Those books don't count, by the way. There's no 40-day plan to anything. I promise you, I have looked, I have tried. While we cannot will it, we cannot will forgiveness for other or for ourselves, we can be willing. And that softness is something that we want to cultivate within ourselves for ourselves, okay? So going back to why it's good for you, the energy, so imagine you have this much energy. Okay, you have this much energy and you are, you know, you've got to get through a whole lot in a day. I've got to love people. I've got to care for people. I've got to live my purpose. I've got to create things that matter. I've got to innovate. I've got to, you know, leave a legacy. I've got to do all these things that we are put on this planet to do. So I've got to do all of this, and I'm needing that whole container of energy. Now, obviously, the physical body has to be healthy, so I'm taking care of my physical health, you know, whether it's sleep and movement and eating right and sunlight and, you know, all of these other things, so I'm not going to go into that. So the physical body is an important part of you being able to have all that energy. But then there is the emotional body and the spiritual body. Now, if I am holding grudges, it actually takes energy, deposits, and says, all right, hold that thought down. I'm gonna hold that grudge. So maybe 10%, maybe 20%, maybe 30% of, depending on how big the wound is, of energy is being held down. And now I have less energy to live my best life or live the life that I want. And I'm not consciously waking up every day and saying, oh, today I will hold these grudges. No, unless you've done the work, your energy is split off and fragmented. Unless you've reintegrated, recognized, recollected, you are fragmented in all sorts of places. And we are holding a lot of this stuff down. Okay, so energetically speaking, we use a lot of energy to hold down the past. And that means we have very little energy to create in the present. So some people will worry about the future, some people will hold grudges in the past, and all of us are holding a grudge, by the way. Whether we know it or not, we are holding on to something that we could be letting go of. And self-forgiveness is one of those things that we don't necessarily tend to. But we've, you know, whether it was broken relationships or, you know, the way we spoke to our parents a certain time, the way we engaged with our siblings, what we didn't get to say to our grandparents, and maybe we were selfish at a certain point in our life because we were going through something, all of that is a signal that, oh, I feel so guilty about this, or I am so ashamed about this. Those are the places we must go and we must bring in and heal and release through the breath, okay? So someone here said that the video is cutting off. Can you guys give me a thumbs up if my video is fine versus this person's maybe Wi-Fi, or is it mine? Thumbs up. Okay. Yeah, good, thumbs up. All right, so I've now told you guys about why we should forgive. Actually, let me tell you one more thing, which is not in my notes, but it just came to me as I looked out the window. I think it really is about just feeling open and soft. It's about feeling not defensive against life, right? There's a softness that comes when we forgive ourselves. When we are in defense mode, unconsciously or consciously, against another person or against ourselves, we are contracted. We are ready to fight. We are in control. We think we are powerful, but we're not. We're actually like so scared. And that is not power, guys. I have had moments in my life, and more recently, those moments were a little bit more frequent than in the past, where I felt power, true power. And I can tell you that it was not control. Control is not the same thing as power. Take control of your life and take, you know, we talk a lot about control, and that control is contracted. There is a contraction in my body when I think of control. You know, I, as you guys followed me through my day yesterday, I do a lot in a day, and that's pretty typical of my day. I'm like full on from 5 a.m. all the way to 9 p.m. and, you know, even sometimes 10 p.m. And so this is not an unusual day for me. And there is no such thing as typical day for me, but I'm not in control. There are things that I plan. There are things that I move into. I absolutely have discipline, but I'm not in control. There's a difference here, and it might be so nuanced that we cannot feel it until we feel it in our body. But surrender is the closest feeling to power, if not the same feeling. When I am in a state of flow, I'm using no energy. Imagine you're flowing down a river, right? You're flowing down a river, you require a whole lot less energy than if you were swimming upstream. And there are times when I feel like I'm swimming upstream, and then I have to check myself and say, okay, what's going on here? What am I not submitting to? What am I not releasing control of? What do I need to accept here? Like, those are questions that I will have. But when you're in the flow of life, you actually are not using a lot of control. So yeah, I'm tired at the end of the day, and I'm like, I'm ready to go to bed. But I'm not depleted in any way. And so, so this is not a matter of control. This is a matter of trust, surrender, softening into our life. And when you are in that open and receiving state, you just do a lot more with your life. Love comes easier. You're not thinking through the 10,000 things before you engage with a person. Will she hurt me? Will she not? What will she say? Will I be able to tolerate? It's okay. You know what? I'm good. They cannot hurt me because I'm good. It will hurt. Like a pinch, like a, oh, that wasn't very nice. But it's not, I'm not going to shatter and unravel because someone said something negative about me. Because I know me. I know my faults. I know my weaknesses. I know where I go wrong. I have the strength and the courage to admit my fault when there is a fault. I have the courage and the curiosity to consider, could I have come off that way? I didn't mean it. Like, but you know what? When I'm like in, you know, moving through my day. Sometimes I'm moving at lightning speed and it can come off a bit abrasive to people. So I know I wasn't being mean, but I can come off that way. Do I have the courage to say that? Yeah, that's what it's about. And so forgiveness leads to that. So this was all the big why. Why do we want to forgive ourselves? Because we really want to cultivate a relationship with ourselves that is honest. And when you have that honest relationship with yourself, then there's not much other people can do to shatter you with their words or with their hurt. There are like grief and things like that that can happen, but I'm talking about just when people are hurtful. Like, it's still hurtful. Don't be hurtful. Don't be hurtful. But, you know, there's a story that I heard where, imagine that you are walking in a forest and you see this animal, this, you know, let's just say dog, and it's like growling at you and it's attacking you and it's ready to, you know, pounce on you. And you're like, oh, why is this dog, you know, coming at me this way? I didn't do anything to this dog. And so you go on full protective mode. And then you walk a little bit further along and you look and you see, ah, oh, wait, the dog's foot is caught in a trap. This was in a Star Wars movie too, when she walked down and she saw the snake, the big snake. It was wounded. And so most people, you know, when they say hurt people, that compassion for another person, when you're like, gosh, like it must be a really dark world inside of that heart or mind. And how hurt must you be to hurt me this way? That comes when you are self-forgiving also. And then you come to yourself and you say, yeah, I can see that you acted out of that wound. Guys, the ego comes from a place, it's the original wound that gives birth to the ego. The ego is not something to eliminate and control and to fight and all of these things. I don't believe this. I personally would not like to have a battle with my ego or have any battle inside of me. I would like us all to get along and just everybody live in this kingdom happily. That's what I want my inner life to be, okay? Have a kingdom where all people exist and all people have a voice, but not everybody has the authority to make the call. So the ego is part of my kingdom and my inner kingdom. And I will engage with the ego, and sometimes the ego, you know, acts out, but I'm not gonna control it. I would like there to be love in this kingdom. I would like there to be acceptance and tolerance and joy and openness and trust in this kingdom. If I say I'm gonna control you, are you gonna trust me? No, not really. But if I say I wanna know you, I want to get to be friendly, you know, I want to be your friend, let's just say, or I want to get to be in your inner space and I want to earn that right. And if I say these things, will you work with me? Will you trust me more? The same interaction as without, so within. So I need to engage myself in the same way. And I would say the same thing about horses. Someone told me that, you know, dressage is all about control. I was like, really? I ain't controlling that horse, and I must humble myself to know that this 2,000 pound beast is not in my control, okay? And no, like if it wants me off its back, it's gonna throw me off its back. It's about communicating and it's about collaborating. It's about cooperating. It's about love. And I'm telling you, I'd like you to do this. And you're saying, sure, I'll listen. It's about that for me when I'm riding horses. Same thing I would say about being with my children. I'm not controlling my kids. Like this, they'd be on my control. And As a parent, I can tell you that if you think you're in control, you probably are not. But it's about saying, hey, let me try to convince you, or let me negotiate this with you. Let me show you why I said that. This is my relationship with my kids. Don't get me wrong. There are moments where I am absolutely acting out of fear, like that dog with its paw in the trap. I am that dog, okay? And I'm like barking away at my kids because I feel so scared that they might not make it into the future. So study for that test, and why are you not taking that SAT? Oh, I'm telling you, that happens. And then I check in with myself, and then I forgive myself, and then I go ask for forgiveness from my daughter or my son and say, I'm really sorry I did that, and I'm scared. I'm scared that you're not taking this seriously, and that's my stuff. And then we're done. So it's really about, it's about being that way with yourself, okay? And being in that sort of soft, non-judgmental, curious, courageous way. Now, I will say that people who, what gets in the way of us being able to forgive ourselves is our need for control. So people who are anxious, people who are perfectionists, which also, let's just, under the umbrella of anxiety, people who just hold on to the past, it's so linked to your anxiety. It's your need for control, that I must assert control over the situation. And we believe that if we forgive ourselves for that, then we might get so relaxed and do it again. So just so we are on point and on in control, we hold that grudge. The same thing goes for, I've heard people say this, by the way, where they've said that I'm so afraid of shifting my relationship with my grief over my loved one, the loss of the loved one. I'm so afraid that if I'm not sad every day, that I might forget them. So that they hold on to that, the sad side of the grief, rather than the reverence and the compassion and the gratitude and the positive feelings. They're so afraid that if they forget the sadness of missing them, then they might actually forget them altogether. They might not remember them at all. And in the same way, that if I forgive myself for what I did, then I might get so relaxed and hurt someone that I love again. And I just don't want to do that. So it's the way we assert our power over a past which we have no power over. It's a false sense of power, guys. And it's a false sense of control. So it's so important that you see the connection between trust and forgiveness. You see the relationship between trust and being able to be open and receiving from ourselves also. So when we talk about self-love, there ain't no love, honey. There ain't no love unless there is forgiveness. And our hearts harden. There's film upon film upon film upon film. And our hearts are encased in this film that has hardened because we are not forgiving someone else, or we are not forgiving ourselves. And then we see these sweet memes that say self-love and, And so what is the path to that? Okay? The path is that we must encounter and make contact with the painful feelings that are underneath our grudge against ourselves. And that, like I said, is shame. Okay? So let's talk a little bit about what is the work, how to do this. I'm so like, you know, I wish we could just talk and not how to do this in five steps. Like, I'm having a reaction to this way because, guys, like, let me tell you, I've been doing this work for a long time, a very long time, and I'm still doing it. And the things that, you know, it's layers and layers and layers. So you must have courage to face yourself in the mirror and say out loud, I hurt this person and I feel so bad. It's like a confession out loud. But you say it and you look at yourself in the mirror and oof, the shame that will surface. Disintegrating shame that will surface as a result of you saying, you know, I'm so, you know, I lied to this person, or I cheated on this person, or I got a divorce and I had children and I'm so ashamed of that. I, you know, failed at this business and lost so much money. These are things that people have a hard time forgiving themselves for. Saying it out loud and softening your body. Like, you're really softening your body at that time. Like, you've got to, like, okay, hit me. Like, that feeling when it surfaces, where is it? Make contact with it in your body. My shoulders, my throat, my ears, my ankles, my gut, like I'm getting punched in my heart. It might feel like all of these things. And you say, yes, I'm going to soften into this feeling of shame. You might need to hold your heart and your gut just to remind yourself all is well, okay? Everything's gonna be okay. I've got you, I've got you. And just like you would to a little kid, and you say, I've got you, everything's gonna be fine. You do that to yourself. And maybe you don't wanna do this work until you have that compassionate voice at least somewhat cultivated, okay? So maybe you wanna start there. Just engage with that compassion. How do you talk to plants, talk to children, talk to animals? Talk to, you know, the people you love. How do they talk to you? Find that someone who loves you and is always so forgiving of you. Because we want to internalize that, or we want to really make that part of us a solid being. You might even want to give it a name. You want to give it a face. You want to give it an energy. What is that person wearing? Is it like a Yoda inside of you? Is it, you know, like an angel? What is that? Really cultivate that inner wise adult who is compassionate, and then maybe come do this work. So step by step, okay? And then you want to make contact and you want to just say yes, and that too. And you want to breathe, and you want to breathe, and you want to breathe through that. Guys, there is power in your breath and there are power in your words. Release it through your words. I forgive myself for fill in the blank. I realize that I caused pain to and fill in the blank. So that's what we're going to do. And when you think about forgiveness, most people are like, I don't know how to forgive myself. Don't forgive yourself, just show self-compassion. Just forget the word forgiveness. And show up compassionately for yourself. Lovingly for yourself. And if you don't have that voice, remember, activate someone who has been that way with you. Maybe it was a coach. Maybe it was a teacher. Maybe it was a priest. Maybe it was, you know, a friend, somebody that said, I am, you are loved and you are human. And every human being makes mistakes. You know, something that we see, something that is happening on social media, this cancel culture. Guys, unless you're perfect, stop canceling anyone and stop commenting on other people, really, because it's not helping the world in any way. You might want to like direct message them, hey, maybe you want to make note of this, but it's not adding to the world in any beneficial way. And there are a lot of people canceling a lot of people, and one day you too will be canceled. And I think back to the heroes of the past, right? We had the Gandhis and the Martin Luther Kings and JFKs and Mandelas. You think they were perfect? Yeah, no, they would never have made it in today's world. They would have been canceled. The things they said about and the things they did and the relationships they had and, you know, the wrongs they did. There were many wrongs. By the way, Google it. Nobody was perfect. We've idealized them and we think that they were perfect and there are no heroes left. No, there are heroes today and they're just not perfect because we have an ideal of this perfect being that will only be the hero. You are imperfect and people are imperfect. Everyone is imperfect. So if you like, you know, see me losing it at some point, don't be like, oh, Dr. Saleha talks so much about love, but look at how she is. It was a moment. I lost it. I'm human. Okay? It hasn't happened yet. It hasn't happened yet, but I am so afraid of it. Someone's gonna get me on camera, like losing it in my car or something, and I will be canceled. But come on, guys. Like, this is not a forgiving world we live in. And this is where my kids can like, you know, totally like blackmail me, like catch me completely sprawled on the couch with my M&Ms and like my Diet Coke. This is what she preaches, you know, she preaches self-care. Well, in that moment, that was self-care, okay? And yeah, I have no shame to admit that I am human. And I want you to know you are human. And I want you to know you are absolutely fallible. And you are absolutely like every other human being on this planet. The saints are human. And they too had fault. They just asked for forgiveness from their higher power. There's not a lot of self-forgiveness in different religions, but you must be that for yourself as well. That internal work has to be done. And I think saying it out loud, writing it, showing up for compassion, so that's what I said, making contact with the emotions, writing about the offense might actually be very helpful too. So you can do it with the moon when it's a full moon and you're ready to release. You could do it once a year. You know, this is the tradition of atonement where you ask for forgiveness from God, from the person, from yourself, all of these things, you can do that. And so writing down the offense and then writing down your response. And if you cannot forgive yourself, ask yourself why. Just start there. You know, like, why is it so hard for me to forgive myself? For me, it took me years. And no one ever told me that I was not making contact with my shame. That shame was underneath the anger and the grudge. And if I didn't have the anger and the grudge, I would now need to feel the shame. And I did not want to feel shame. That's, if someone told me that, maybe I would have softened. But shame, the thing is, once you feel it and release it, it's gone. As soon as you bring it to light, and as soon as you talk about it with another person, and it is met with love, it's gone. Like that. No more shame. it's like magic, actually. And so, and now there is more energy where there was this heaviness of shame inside of you. You now have more energy. Another thing you might need to do is to make amends with. I've had people reach out to me. I've reached out to people from the past and say, I'm really sorry about this. I've apologized to everybody in my life because at some point or another, I have hurt them all, right? In your egotistical adolescence, the things you said to your mother, father, brother, sister, like you think you know it all. Like, yeah, we all been there. And, you know, I've apologized for those things, but I've also apologized to myself for betraying myself. There was only one thing that I can say that really I was like, oh, you knew this and you didn't do it. You knew this. Usually I do it, but I was so, I didn't apply to this one college I wanted to go to. Applied to many colleges, but this one college I really wanted to go to, I didn't apply. Because I was so afraid they were going to say no. And they probably would have, but I didn't do it. That's my one regret in life. I've done many things that were regrettable, but I worked through them, I integrated the lessons, I asked for forgiveness, I did all of that work, so I don't regret them now. But that one thing I didn't do, and I betrayed myself in that moment. And I didn't listen to myself that you really want this, just apply. But I couldn't, I was too young and too fragile, and I think being rejected by that university would have just probably been too shameful for me. And so I didn't do it. And I had to forgive myself for that self-betrayal. And I think most of us are betraying ourselves at some point or another, okay? If you know your truth and you haven't come to some sort of reconciliation about it, and worked through it and landed on a decision about staying or leaving or doing or not doing or applying or not applying, if you haven't made a value-centered decision about it, you are betraying yourself. So this is when most people are like, I didn't really care, I don't want to do this, or you know what, yeah, I forgave her, it's no big deal, or oh yeah, I went through it, I learned a lot, I'm not regretting. Don't be flippant about this stuff, guys. Like, this is hard work. For people who've done the work, they'll tell you that it ain't easy, and you do have to do, like, if it's all rainbows and sunshine, then you haven't gone there yet. The journey of integration, the journey of forgiveness, self-forgiveness, is not an easy one. It's not an easy one. And this idea of self-betrayal, don't confuse it with sacrifice. Oh, I will not betray myself and see this movie when I don't feel like seeing this movie. Come on, guys. That's not betrayal. That's just you sacrificing yourself to go watch a movie because your husband likes it or your kids like it. There's a difference. And I think most people have confused the two. I should be happy all the time. No, you shouldn't. Sometimes it just like, okay, fine, I'm going to do this because I'm doing it out of love for the person that I love. Okay, and I am sacrificing myself for the person that I love. Every tradition will have some story about sacrifice, where you sacrifice something you love for the sake of something higher, right? So you can't sacrifice your happiness for the sake of a bigger goal. So that is not betrayal, but you must come to that. You must do the work and the struggle of why am I choosing this life? Why am I not, you know, why am I doing something? For example, people who say, well, I really want to be a painter, or an artist or a writer, but I feel like I'm betraying myself every day when I go to work. Okay, why are you going to work? Well, I've got to provide for my family, and I want to make sure that I put them through the right education, and I want to take care of my parents. Okay, let's talk about that. So is this self-betrayal, or are you sacrificing for this time in your life for the sake of a higher goal? There's a difference, but you've got to do the work. So don't confuse self-betrayal with self-sacrifice or sacrifice of yourself in this moment for a higher goal. You're gonna have to do the work, and there is no easy answer. There are people who are in marriages where they know that it's not the right person for them, but they are doing it for the sake of their family, for the sake of their values, for the sake of their whatever, right? Religion, etc. They are making a conscious choice to do that. And that's okay. No one has the right to judge that. And there are people who are leaving their marriages because that is what being authentic to themselves looks like. And they can. And there is no one that can judge them for that. So what that looks like for you is going to be your story. It's going to be your work. It's going to be your personal process. It cannot be something that I can talk about on an Instagram live about, hey guys, this is the general rule. And we are in great, danger. We are in great danger here because we look at a tile which can only hold a certain amount of words, and it's literally within seconds we're programming ourselves to go, this is how it should be, right? Leave if no one, if that person doesn't bring you joy. Really? Do you leave every relationship that doesn't bring you joy? Not really. Like, you don't get to leave every relationship that doesn't bring you joy 100% of the time. Like, literally, you would have no person in your life, including yourself. But, there's not a lot of tiles that are teaching us about discipline, about showing up through the tough times and the good times for ourselves and for each other. To be compassionate. And what does that even mean in our day-to-day life? It seems like a really nice idea. Forgiveness seems like a really nice idea. Compassion seems like a really nice idea until we actually have to live it. Then we're like, then I'm gonna be critical. And who does she think she is? And who does he think he is? And where did all of that go? It's a practice, guys. It is not in our nature. It is not necessarily in our wiring. Survival, when we take survival into account, it is, this one show where it was Survivor, where you had to survival of the fittest, that bit kicks on in us, that we've got to be faster, shrewder, more cutthroat, more critical, more perfect, more, and all the compassion and forgiveness sort of goes out the window. No, I don't want to live like that. I don't think you want to live like that either. I think there's a lot of people on here because they know that that's not right. They don't want to live in such a defensive state. It's exhausting. It's exhausting to feel like the world is a dangerous place only. And that world is a critical place only. And the world is a dark place only. It's exhausting and draining. And I don't want to get to the end of my life and say, oh, I survived. No, man. I want to see the world around me, not just go around traveling. I just want to see. I want to see people rather than have this filter of I have to protect myself all the time. And that armor you're wearing, it's heavy. Imagine those days, when the knights had to wear an armor and then they had to go off into the world. When you take the armor off, it's like 90 pounds. And that's heavy. And that's how much this armor, how heavy this armor is that we have against ourselves and against the world, because we need to feel like we're in control. The opposite of control is trust. I trust myself. I trust my kids. I trust my partner. I trust my friends. I trust people. I trust people. I trust the people that work with me. I trust the source, the force. I trust that someone's got me, that I'm not alone and I'm supported. And so I don't need to control everything. I trust that. Don't get me wrong. I'm still gonna plan. I'm gonna plan. And then I surrender. Whatever happens, we'll see. It'll be good. So planning is not the opposite of trust. You should plan and you should organize yourself and you should have a disciplined practice. I'm not floating through my days and just, hey, let's just see. I trust that the universe will take me where, no. I'm going to be very deliberate and intentional about how I live my life and how I, you know, live my life on purpose, with purpose. And then I will surrender that what shows up in that room is supposed to happen. What shows up here, I don't have every word out of my mouth coming typed out. I trust that I know, I've planned for it, I've read about it, I've thought about it, I've slept on it, I've dreamt about it, and now I show up in front of you with it. And whatever comes out, I trust that it is meant to be here, and hopefully it is of use. So that's what trust is to do and practice and then surrender to the flow. Do, practice, plan, and then surrender. It's this dance that you're constantly doing with life and showing up for your life in this dance. It's the middle path, guys. You know, Carl Jung talked about tension of the opposites, holding the tension inside of ourselves. Too often we are one-sided. Oh, I need to plan, control, like this is what we do. This is controlling. And then some people are like, oh, but I trust that life will take me in the direction of my dreams. And so they're like super trusting. No. Okay. We're gonna hold both of these inside because they both exist in me. I'm super trusting and I'm super in my planning mode. You could ask my assistant how, like a hawk, I watch my schedule with intention. And so this is where I hold that tension. And as all religions and traditions will tell us, it is the middle path. So Jung said that if you hold the tension inside of you, the third thing will surface called the transcendent function. And that transcendent function is the new thing that surfaces when you hold that tension. What happens now? Oh, I don't really like my job. Oh, I quit. Okay, wait, can we think about this? You know, this great resignation that most people have talked about? Soon there are people that saying it was the great regret or the great, you know, recalibration or the great, reevaluation of, well, maybe that wasn't such a great idea. There are people who are saying I left too soon, too quickly. You don't make decisions to run away from something. Oh, I want something new is not a good enough reason. It's not a value-centered reason. I want something new, I want to change, is not anchored in values. And you will find that wherever you go, there you will be. And soon you will want to change that. And soon you will want to change that. And you will never feel settled, and you will never feel grounded, because you will constantly be looking for the new happiness. Give me something new. It doesn't come from the outside, guys. That's got to come from the inside. And don't get me wrong, man, this close to the great resignation was this person right here. I thought about resigning. I'm like, can I resign? I was so in it, and you know, and God gave me such a challenge where I could not resign from the lighthouse, from my job, from my life, from motherhood, all of that. I wanted to resign from it all. I was like, I'm done with this. I'm exhausted. Hold the tension. And I love my job, and I love the people that I work with, and I love that my life has meaning, and I love that my life has purpose, and I love that I am of service every single day as a mother, as a wife, as a daughter, as a sister, and in my profession. And hold that tension. And out of that, the third will come. I'm still working on that third. I have not come to it yet. But that's what that looks like. So holding the tension, and by the way, you might still resign. You might still resign and you might still be very happy, but as long as you did it because of value, some value, rather than, oh, I'm chasing happiness in the next job. Was it maybe you left a profession that you didn't like, or workplace was not very healthy, or, you know, it was colleagues that were not very healthy, or you were not growing and you really value growth? Of course, those are reasons that you might want to leave. But we are too quick in this consumer culture to move to the next thing. Oh, look, this thing has, you know, 2 megabytes more or whatever, and like off we go to the next. And that consumer culture has become ingrained in the way we look at our relationships, in the way we look at our jobs, in the way we look at where we live. Like, we just want to move to the next happiness. It gives us a sense of like, oh, I'm doing something with my life, but we're actually not doing the work. And unless you've come to that deep sort of, I've really thought about this and this is the next move for me, you're probably gonna find yourself back here after 3 to 5 years. Like, back in that same place where you say, I need something different. And I've just seen it. I've seen it, and I've seen it in my practice, in my professional sphere, in my personal sphere. People who are looking for happiness will keep looking for happiness. But if you are living a life of values, then you will probably make the right decision, and you won't need to have changes in your life every 3 to 5 years, because you will be doing that inner work. So this change sometimes we are looking for is actually, I need something to change. I need something in my life to change. But that's not necessarily, oh, I need to leave this relationship, or I need to leave this city, or I need to leave this job. It's about, I need something in me to change. I need to do something differently. I need to live life differently. But that's hard. So I'll just go change the outside world, and then it gives the illusion that something has changed, when really, wherever you go, there you are. And you'll find yourself right back where you started. 3 to 5 to 7, maximum 12 years. That's the cycle, guys. 3, 5, 7, 11. That's what I've noticed, that people will find themselves, and the more patient people will come to it at 11, 12 years. So it's really important to know yourself, consider having a relationship with yourself. How do I have a relationship with myself? Just like you have a relationship with everything else. Spend time with yourself, wonder about yourself, listen to your inner voice, listen to how critical it is, do new things, then that voice will show up. See how you judge others, think about the things you don't like about yourself, think about the things you don't like about other people. It will point you in the things that you don't like about yourself. So if you are like, oh, what does she think she is? Something in you is in the shadow. Either you don't give yourself enough credit, or you give yourself too much credit. So the shadow, I've done too many videos on this. You guys can read about that. And cultivate that inner adult. Go to the wounded part and work on self-compassion. And know that it is a cultivation, guys. You cultivate a forgiving heart. It's not like
I am now a forgiving person because I've done my work. No.
It's a constant, constant, constant running stream of compassion that washes off the wounds and the pain that we encounter every single day. Every single day, we have to do that work of opening up and compassion towards others, compassion towards self. And then we wash away that hardness for the day. You know, you don't brush your teeth, you develop a plaque on your teeth. Some of you might know this. If you don't sleep, you develop a plaque in your brain, which then can result in cognitive difficulties or, you know, disorders like dementia. So if you don't sleep 7 to 8 hours, you can develop this plaque, sticky substance. Same thing goes for your heart. If you don't show up for yourself with compassion every day, do something loving for someone every day, do something kind for someone every day, talk to yourself with laughter and humor and kindness every day, that plaque starts to develop and it hardens and it literally suffocates our life source. So in the brain, it actually goes after the hippocampus, which is our memory bank, which is where Alzheimer's and dementia comes from. In our heart, it actually starts to take away our life force, our energy source. And then we feel like we are the walking dead. There is no joy in your life if there is no forgiveness / compassion for self or other. You will do 1,000 things. You can change 1,000 jobs and 1,000 partners, and you will not find joy unless you've done this work of forgiveness of self and other, which is linked to all sorts of other things, which I've talked about in my other Instagram videos when it comes to healing. So it really is about having access to the force again, guys. We want to have access to the force. I'm gonna end with that. May the force be with you.